I don't know what sort of a week you've had. For me, it's been a long week. It's one of those weeks when, because of the time in the calendar, you have to sort out all the finances for September. And no pressure, October is the last year in our commercial calendar, so it's year end and everything has to be done. Oh, and there's invoices to do. And then that's only supposed to be 20% of my job. And then there's a few more projects that need chasing up and a few quotations to give. And then there's the main 80% part of my job, when the thing I thought I had done last Friday and finished came back with questions and had to be redone during the week. It's been a long week. And I'm sure I'm not alone. Some of you have had a long week. Some of you have been caring for folk who are in hospital. Others of you have been caring for folk that you wish were in hospital because they need more care than you can give, and we're just waiting for appointments. And it's been a long week just waiting for that. Some of you have been starting very early and catching the train at stupid o'clock in the morning. And some of you have been finishing late. Some of you is the same people who've been finishing late, come home just enough time to sort of get into bed and get ready for the next day. Some folk I know have been struggling with physical pains and aches and illnesses and not being quite straight, and it's been a long week. And some people, it's mental. It's strains and stresses and anxiety and depression, and it makes the time just seem to go ever so slow. And you can identify with the disciples whose boat was being buffeted. In the passage that we're going to look at, it's on page 981. If you want to follow it in the church Bibles, it's Matthew 14 and starting at verse 22. Matthew 14 and 22. And it describes the scene like this. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. Now, this was dismissing the crowd after Jesus had fed the 5,000, which you can read in the previous verses. Fed the 5,000, and then they'd been gathering up 12 baskets of food left over. Jesus dismissed the crowd. Verse 23. After he had dismissed them, Jesus went up on the mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Tom Wright, in his commentary on Matthew, called Matthew for Everyone, has these words. We humans can do so much, but we still need help. We have machines for making war, but we don't have a machine to make peace. We have enough technology to put a man on the moon, but not enough to put food in hungry stomachs. We can hear the sound of whales singing at the bottom of the ocean, but not the souls of people in the next street. These disciples had been buffeted by the waves. They had been trying to cross this lake, trying to get to the other side, and they were buffeted. They couldn't make much progress. They were probably rowing, because it says the wind was against them. They had gone a considerable distance from the shore, several kilometres or miles, we think, from the measurements that they used to use in those days. And they were struggling to get to where they needed to be. They had been rowing, presumably, all night so far to get there and not made it. And I just want to encourage folk, if you've been like me and you've had a long week, maybe you think, well, I'll come to church and all those other folk in church, they're good Christian people and they don't have these problems. Look at their nice smiles. Look at that. They've managed to get up in time to comb their hair and get to church on time. And they don't have these problems. And I'm a really bad Christian. And they must be really good Christians. Well, look at these disciples. These disciples were doing exactly what Jesus had told them to do. He said, get in the boat and go over there. And that is exactly what they were doing. They were not being disobedient. They were not against God's will. And yet, they were being buffeted. And I want to encourage you, if you're being buffeted, don't let the devil, the accuser, because that is another name for the devil, don't let the accuser accuse you of being a bad Christian because you're being buffeted. This is what happens in life. We have the wind against us. We have the waves against us. The boat of our life is just being buffeted. That's where they were, buffeted by the wind. And I'll try and go ahead one slide at a time. And it was not what they had expected. I wonder if you think, you know, I wish I had been a disciple. It would have been so easy to have faith in Jesus if I actually was there. If I actually saw him, I wouldn't have any problem believing. My problem is, because it all happened 2,000 years ago, I struggle to believe. But what we find when we look at the Bible is that Jesus came to these disciples in the boat, and it wasn't really what they were expecting. Shortly before dawn, now this is probably like 3, 4, 5 a.m. in the morning, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. Some of you know I'm really interested in language. Cried out in fear. Our English word cry is only ever seems to be used in books. Do you ever say, I'm just crying out? No, you don't. But when you read a story, children's story, or you read a Bible story, it says cried out. I remember I had a colleague who was Italian, but she'd learnt French, and so she spoke those two languages very well, and she was speaking to me in English, and she said, John, I can't hear you on the phone very well. Could you cry a little louder? That's what this word cry means. It means shout. These guys were not just, ooh, I wonder what that is. Might be a ghost. They were crying out in fear. What is it? This is possibly going to be the end of our lives. What do you think happens that just before you die? Do you see some sort of the grim reaper coming to collect you? It's the end of your days. You've been rowing all night. You're going to sink. What has happened? It wasn't what they expected. They saw Jesus, but they found it difficult to believe it was Jesus. And I wonder if there's things that happen in our lives that have been sent to us by God and we don't actually recognise that they have been sent to us by God. And Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. And this is so similar to many of the things that we read in the Old Testament about when people realized that they were in the presence of God, they were afraid. And the angel or the appearance, the person they were talking to, said, take courage, don't be afraid. And in this case, we read, Jesus said, it's me, as we would say nowadays, because we don't have very good grammar. But grammatically correct, it is I. It's me. And when we look at the language that's written in the Bible, it could be translated a kind of hint that if you know these languages, you get this hint that it's the same thing as the way Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the true vine. I am the good shepherd. Take heart. I am. Do not be afraid. It's not the main meaning, and our translation is accurate to say it is I in this situation, but you just have that little overtone, I am. Just like when Moses was at the burning bush and said, what's going on? And God said, I am who I am. And he revealed himself to them. And a lot of commentators have helpfully described how this passage must have stuck in the minds of the disciples because they knew the Old Testament so well. And they knew how God had revealed himself to people in the Old Testament. How with Moses, he had spoken to Moses and said, I am. How with Moses, there'd been this control over the Red Sea so that you could walk on what should have been a sea. And they might have been thinking, one greater than Moses is here. And they recognized Jesus. And they remembered it, and it's got written down in the Bible for us. What I hadn't realized until I was preparing this sermon is what somebody pointed out. Do you realize only the disciples saw this miracle? So just before this miracle, we can read earlier in the chapter that Jesus fed 5,000 people. And obviously, there were at least 5,000 witnesses of that. And then after crossing this walking on the water, at the end of the passage we read, people brought to Jesus all who were ill to him and begged him to let those who were ill just touch the edge of his cloak. And all who touched it were healed. And the word healed there is healed completely, healed through and through. And everybody saw those miraculous healings. So before Jesus walked on the water, everyone saw the feeding. Afterwards, everyone saw the healing. But only the disciples saw this miracle of walking on the water. And the commentator who points this out says this, surely Jesus means to say, when you serve me and you give and give and give, until you think you can give no more, I will take care of you. I will always be enough for you. If you pour out your life to give bread to the world, I will be your all-satisfying bread. The more you satisfy others, the more I will be your satisfaction. The more you give life to others, the more I will be life to you. Jesus cared for the disciples. He cared for them whether people were watching or not. And he came to care for them as they were buffeted by the waves. He walked on the water towards them to encourage them. Sometimes we have personal miracles and nobody sees them. I've had a miracle. I've had a miracle where I felt I just needed to spend some time to send a message to someone who was going through a hard time. But I knew if I did that, I'd be late for work. But I thought, I just have to do this, and I'll trust God. Well, by a miracle, my train was late. Well, you say that doesn't sound like a miracle, First Great Western. But the train, if I hadn't caught that train, I would have had to wait for 20 minutes for the next one. And it would have then probably done what that later train always does, which is stop and wait for the train in front. But this train was a little bit late, and they gave it priority, and it arrived straight away, and I walked off it, and I walked straight onto the tube. And that's a private miracle. Nobody was there to witness it but me, and it was an answer to prayer. And I believe God still does do private miracles. Yes, there may be public miracles when we're all gathered together and somebody gets up and walks who couldn't walk before and we say, marvellous, we've seen a miracle. But sometimes there are private miracles. Paul's going to be sharing with us this evening from a passage in Acts which talks about extraordinary miracles. And I believe there are extraordinary miracles, but also ordinary miracles, because a miracle is when God is at work. Whether it's something unusual, very unusual, or completely extraordinary, it's still a miracle. It's God at work. Sometimes there will be private miracles, and I believe Paul's likely to share a few miracles that he's seen this evening. I grew up with A.A. Milne and Winnie the Pooh. And Winnie the Pooh is a whimsical character, and we have these lovely little illustrations of his life in 100-acre wood. And then Disney came along, and Disney has a new take, and Winnie the Pooh has a t-shirt. And eventually they came up with a series in 2005 called My Friends Tigger and Pooh. And Tigger has become bigger and bigger, and bouncier and bouncier. And the original bit in the book that said, we think Tigger's got too much bounce, has been forgotten about. And Tigger is now bigger than Pooh in the Disney-fied version. And why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because in this story that we are looking at, this passage of the Bible, we're reading about Jesus walking on the water. And yet many of us, and even some of the commentators that I've read, would have you believe that this is the story of Peter walking on the water. The main point of this is that Jesus walked on the water. It wasn't that Peter walked on the water. And I think it's just like Pooh and Tigger. We sometimes get these things in the wrong order. I'm going to try and get the next page. Peter is neither condemned nor commended for what he did. Because Peter said, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Jesus said, come. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. Jesus didn't say to the rest of the disciples, why didn't you get out? Jesus didn't say to Peter, oh, well done, you had more faith than everybody else. In fact, if we look at it, Jesus said to Peter, why did you have so little faith? And I think we've got to be very careful when we look at the Bible that we actually look at what it says rather than what we think it might say or what somebody else said it says. It actually says that Jesus said to Peter, you are a person of little faith. Maybe Peter shouldn't have got out of the boat at all. Maybe Peter shouldn't have said, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. But I don't think we should get a hang-up about that because, as I said, I think God does private miracles. That was a private miracle for Peter. Peter was that kind of a guy. He needed God to show him that at that time in his life. And God did a private miracle for Peter that he did for nobody else. And Peter walked on the water. Peter couldn't walk on the water afterwards. We can read in the Bible later, after Jesus was raised from the dead, Peter had to swim. He couldn't walk on the water all the time. It was a special miracle just for that time. When Peter started walking on the water, he took his eyes off Jesus and looked at the wind. Peter got down out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And we look at that and we can see the reason that he started to sink is because he started looking at the waves. And if you're in that sort of position in your life where there are lots of waves buffeting you, perhaps the message for you this morning is, look at Jesus. Don't look at the wind. Don't look at the waves. Because if you do, you're going to sink. Look at Jesus. Say to Jesus, Lord, save me. Look at Jesus. Keep your eyes on him. There seems to be a lot about learning from failure at the moment. Some people have written books about it. I was watching the television this morning. The rugby team are trying to learn from failure. It just seems to be what we need to do. Can we learn from Peter's failure? Can we learn to have more faith, keep our eyes on Jesus and not on the wind? Peter prayed, Lord, save me. There you go. If you don't know how to pray, there's a prayer for you. Lord, save me. Very simple, just three words. I'd like to encourage you, if you don't feel that you can pray, to pray. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be long-winded. You don't have to know special words. You don't have to know special Bible words. You can just pray, Lord, save me. Peter could have prayed in the words of Psalm 69. This is a psalm of David. David was a very poetic, very capable, very talented man, wrote lots of psalms. He could have prayed, and it goes on for how many verses? It goes on for 36 verses. But he just said, save me, Lord, save me. Let me read you the first few verses of Psalm 69. It's very, very apt. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in the miry depths where there is no foothold. I have come into the deep waters, the floods engulf me. I am worn out calling for help. My throat is parched. My eyes fail looking for my God. Those who hate me without reason outnumber the hairs of my head. Many are the enemies without cause, those who seek to destroy me. I am forced to restore what I did not steal. You, Lord, know my folly. My guilt is not hidden from you. And that's just the first five verses. Sometimes if we don't know what to pray, have a look at a psalm. It will help give you some words. You can use the words of Scripture to pray with. Or you can just say, Lord, save me. Jesus caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? And in this particular case, the word used for doubt is to be in two statuses at once. Sort of believing but not believing. Yes, I do. No, I don't. I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to be in two states at the same time. And there's a few places in the Bible where doubt is described like this. Elijah, for example, went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. The same sort of impression that sometimes our doubt is kind of faith in two minds. It's not that we completely have no understanding of what God can do. It's just that we're in two minds. We're not absolutely sure. We've got two different views of things. And it's similarly quoted in the New Testament in the letter from James, where James says in chapter 1, someone who doubts is like a wave blown and tossed by the wind. Such a person is double-minded. When you're praying, don't expect God to answer you, says James, if you're double-minded. You need to be single-minded. You need to be having faith in God. A bit of physics for you. There's a theory nowadays called chaos theory. And in chaos theory, you have something like a pendulum, and a pendulum is very, very regular. When you start it going, it will keep going. It's so regular that, as you know, many clocks designed to work with pendulums. Then there's something a little bit more complicated where you put a pendulum on the end of a pendulum. So the first one swings and the second one swings off the bottom of that. And that shows what they describe as chaotic behaviour, or one of the pieces of chaotic behaviour, because it depends where you start from. I've got two diagrams, and in one, the start is at 130 degrees, and in the other, the start is at 129 degrees, so just 1 degree different. And you would have thought that those two pendulums, well, you wouldn't really notice the difference. If it was like a clock, you would be able to keep time with it anyway. But what actually happens with these pendulums is that they start to do different things. They start off looking exactly the same, but about 7 seconds into it, they start doing different things. And although it's very regular and deterministic, and you can calculate it with a computer, it does depend where you start from as to how things finish up. So after 25 seconds, you can see that one pendulum is over to the left and the other pendulum is over to the right. One pendulum's over to one side and pointing up, and the other's over to the other side and pointing down. And yet they started very, very close together. And the theoreticians have put together something called chaos theory, and this is one of the pieces of it, that you can have something very, very minutely different at the beginning of something that you ought to be able to predict, and it makes a huge difference. And sometimes this is called the butterfly effect, that maybe a typhoon will go in a different direction if a butterfly flapped its wings from if it would go in another direction if the butterfly didn't flap its wings. And weather is very much like something that is chaotic. This is why our weather predictions, despite having supercomputers and lots of them, we still can't get the weather accurately forecast. And yet, somehow God, in the midst of chaos, can bring order. In the midst of these wind and the waves, when Jesus got into the boat, the wind and the waves died down. It's still true today. In situations we can't predict and we can't control, we can have faith in God because He can. He's the one who brings order out of chaos. He's the one who created the world, who hovered over the waters, as we read in Genesis, and out of all that chaos brought forth something order, brought forth what He wanted, worked His will. And when they got to the other side, when Jesus got into the boat, should I say, they worshipped. Jesus got into the boat. The wind died down. Jesus caught Peter, said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." And later on in Matthew, we come to a passage where Jesus had been raised from the dead. And the disciples saw him. The 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. They saw him. They worshipped him. But some doubted. And I say that because I think maybe there's some folk here that that's a message for. You think, I can't really worship God because I have some doubts. I'm not like all these other people who seem to be quite able to worship God. I've got doubts. I'm not like that. I can't worship God because I've still got a bit of doubt in my mind. The Bible shows us that these people worshipped even though they doubted. The disciples worshipped. They said, "Truly, you are the Son of God." They worshipped the resurrected Jesus, even though some doubted. Maybe that's a message for you this morning. So, where do we go from here? What is this telling us? I think the challenges for us are, do we know Jesus? Do we know God? Do we know what He's capable of doing, what He's like? Would we recognize Him if we saw Him in the middle of the night? In Matthew 22, verse 29, Jesus tells the Sadducees who come to Him to test Him with questions, He says, "You know neither the scriptures nor the power of God. That's why you've got these questions." That's a challenge to us. Do we know the scriptures? Do we know the power of God? Do we know who Jesus is? Would we let Jesus into the boat? When Jesus came, why did Peter say, "If it's you, tell me to get out of the boat"? Why didn't he say, "Jesus, get into the boat"? I think that's the message. Will we let Jesus into the boat? Will we worship Him? And I'd like to encourage you that our faith grows as we remember God's power and as we worship Him. We don't read of any other special techniques that Jesus taught His disciples. This is how to increase your faith. He just said, you need to know the scriptures and the power of God, and your faith will grow. Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid.